It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where we hang out with a group of smart, interesting guys who give us their take on whatever's in the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs this week are Jimmy Israel, opinion writer and blogger, Eugene Robinson, writer and author, online reporter George Kelly, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. And I hear that they want to talk about the latest Republican debate, the military and YouTube, and the divorce rate in America going down for the first time in 30 years. I'm going to mostly eavesdrop. I might jump in every now and again. Take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, fellas, how's it going?
It's going good.
Good. How are you?
Great.
Listen, man, we really should talk about the GOP debates on Tuesday, but I don't know if anybody cared enough to watch. You know, it's like the San Diego Trib reported that more people were watching Nickelodeon's SpongeBob SquarePants. Eugene, are you buying what any of these candidates are selling this early in the game?
Well, these guys are desperately casting about trying to, you know, distinguish themselves from, you know, the last 8 years of horror. You know, is anybody talking about core principles? Nobody's talking about that. They're invoking Reagan and hoping that we forget about the last 6, 7, 8 years, you know.
George Kelly, do you remember the last 8 years?
Vividly. I'm hoping they come out with a pill that'll help you, you know, take it away. I really do.
There is a pill.
These guys got nothing for me. If the only laugh line is Mike Huckabee capping on John Edwards about his hair, then, you know, they're not ready for the issues, and I'm not ready for them.
Ruben, are you ready?
I'm ready, and here's why. Because both on the Democrat and Republican field, you know, it's so vast, there's something for everybody. Now's the time to really make that choice. If you are on the Democratic side, if you're for Hillary or Obama or Richardson or whatever, well, now's the time to tune into that debate. Because if you tune out, then by the time it rolls around and it's a done deal, you're going to be presented again with two names, one Republican and one Democrat. And you're going to say, hey, what's up? What happened to Obama? Well, it's just Hillary now. And like the man says, either you take part or you get taken apart.
Well, yeah, there's that. But, I mean, the facts are these, Ruben. It is too early. I mean, who's even thinking about half of these zeros aren't even going to be around, you know, when it's time for us to think about casting our votes.
And that's why, Ruben, we have to listen so we know which ones don't deserve to be around.
George, bottom line it. Is it too early? What do you think?
It's too early. We have to wait until the primaries. And the trouble is that the dates are shifting. Everything is shifting. It looks like we're all going to get like a bunch of Super Tuesday weekends in January and February.
Yes. I can dig that. Let's talk about the Democratic debates. Now, normally, this is something you see on cable TV news, but now YouTube is getting love from the Dems to post the first 6-party-sanctioned debates. Now, Ruben, is this savvy marketing or a recipe for disaster? Because for me, it's kind of like the Dems are kind of pimping the internet, and they're pimping pretty hard, and they're doing pretty well. But it also seems like there's a really big down for potential candidates to have their flubs and floggings broadcast all over the world.
Right.
Ruben, what say
right.
you?
Well, I'll tell you what. They're going to have that happen to them anyway, whether they like it or not. Mm-hmm. Witness the That's YouTube right. video of John Edwards in front of the in the green room priming his hair, you know, for like 4 hours. You know, that is out there anyway. So they can't control their flubs not ending up on YouTube. I think this is a smart move by YouTube, which, as you know, is owned by Google. And it's a media company that decides, like any other media company, it wants to be a player. I find it interesting that the Democrats, or the Republicans for that matter, I'm sure the Republicans would likewise jump at this chance. They love the idea of getting to that internet user, you know. And so if you're a young person, and God forbid you go to college, you don't even buy a TV anymore, you just take your laptop to your, you know, dorm room, well, then I guess this is a way to reach that core constituency. It's just too big an audience out there with the MySpace and YouTube and all that stuff. You're going to find all those candidates all over that medium because there's just too many folks there to ignore.
Okay, well, Eugene, you know, for me, I have this picture of, you know, Americans shopping for political candidates like they do on eBay. You know, they're online, you know, clicking from candidate to candidate. And I don't know. I mean, is it just slick marketing?
So you're saying you don't think it's inspired debate?
I'm
talking
not
about
so
public debate, that there's a real forum for ideas to be shared. You know, if somebody sends you a link to a YouTube video clip of something, even if it's the longest clip that they have on YouTube, I think goes to like 9 minutes and 30 seconds. You're much more likely to watch that 9 minutes and 30 seconds than you are to watch anything on TV at this point, you know?
But Eugene, for me, I want to interject something here. There's also a great risk that, you know, whatever happens at the 9-minute, 31-second mark might have been critical. And you might be getting these sound bites, you know, or these view bites, you know, out of context.
Hold on a second. Can I throw something in for a second, guys? Don't we always criticize young people for not getting interested in politics? And isn't this a nice way to kind of get them interested since they're the YouTube generation?
It's a very fast food way of getting them interested. You know what I mean? It's too McPolitics for me. You know, it's not a newspaper. It's not, you know, it's not cogent conversation. Yeah, I guess it is the name of the game. You know, with the internet, I guess you got to keep it moving. But speaking of the internet, hold on. Speaking of the internet, let's talk about the numerous reports that the Pentagon has cut off military access to blogs, ostensibly to preserve bandwidth. Both quote fingers up. Now, there's also an idea that, you know, blogging soldiers will inadvertently kind of reveal military secrets, but some people say that the military is trying to control the stream of news and propaganda, and still others say that, you know, this further isolates the troops from the family and friends. Now, George, we all know that you're the blog father. You've been blogging for a minute now. Could blogging hamper the war effort, or be unduly distracted, or, you know, boost morale maybe?
The Pentagon is trying to prevent the next Abu Ghraib from being leaked online. Mm-hmm. You know, 60 Minutes will wait 2 weeks when the Pentagon asks it to hold off on, you know, delivering a report. YouTube doesn't wait for anybody, nor does the web.
Whoa,
and that's what they're scared of.
Ruben, you agree with that?
I agree, and that's why that YouTube deserves to host that Democratic debate, you see, because they're not just going to... There's my plug. Because we just made the argument, get that, we just made the argument that, well, you know, some of us did, and YouTube doesn't, it's not really a real media outlet. Well, we have seen how real media outlets can sometimes be cowed by this administration.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, oftentimes. You know, the one big difference here is sort of putting something out there on a blog where anybody can check it out versus, you know, sending stuff to your family members or whatever. I think there is a lot of truth to the fact that the Pentagon is trying to control the information that comes out of a war zone. Now, I got to say, I don't think that's completely improper, Abu Ghraib notwithstanding.
Isn't that part of what
any war effort includes? There's got to be some. Now, maybe we can debate, you know, who should control it, but you just can't have, you know, a million different dispatches coming out of a war zone. It just doesn't make sense. There needs to be one clearinghouse. You know, if nothing else, when something's inaccurate and we decide to go after somebody, who do we go after? Do we go after Private Johnson, who wrote this, you know, blog? I mean, there needs to be ability to coordinate the message.
Can I just throw out one little fact, just one little detail just for you to consider? The Pentagon's cutoff access, Ruben was alluding to this point, the Pentagon's cutoff access to those sites for people who are using the Defense Department's computer network. You can still get in through sites like Yahoo. You can still use email. The big impact, of course, is for people who are on the front lines because it's harder for them to use the private internet service. I just wanted to throw that out.
On the front lines, people can use the internet cafes that are run by a company called Fubi, for U.S. by Iraqis, not Fubu, Fubi.
Right. Okay, Eugene, drop that science right quick. Go ahead and do that.
I just interviewed this guy, Gregory Papadatos, was a medic over in Iraq, and he was recently quoted in articles in the New York Times and Newsday. He's injured, and it's this whole VA issue. But when he was stationed over there, he was sending me long communications back, and one day I got this livid email from him that they were, and this is right after Abu Ghraib, that they were coming through, and they were confiscating digital cameras for security reasons. And he initially had refused to, and He said, you know, I feel strongly enough about this to make this a larger issue than, no, I'm not going to give you back my camera. It's not like the enemy doesn't know what's going on. This is not a World War II deal. I think that the more information, especially given how doctored the information has been, the more information that we get, the better off we're going to be. And I think that's a great promise of, you know, that Web 2.0 is offering. And I don't see, because it's Iraq, that it should be any different. Certainly things there can't be any worse. So I don't see how that is going to do anything but improve possibly the situation and our understanding of the situation. You know, as it is, the worst thing possible has happened, and that's that people are, like, starting to forget that we're even at war, you know?
All right. You know. Well, true that, man. But, yo, check this out. Let's switch gears right about now. Now, Eugene, you'll appreciate this. Because the Associated Press reports that the divorce rate has dropped significantly since 1970. Now, this might be because more people are choosing to live together. And Eugene, now, you know, I've been around the mulberry bush twice now. And I can say that, you know what, there's a lot to recommend the shack up. You get all the benefits, none of the hassle. And if you do plan to get married, look, a crash test is a lot easier than a divorce. I mean, if the whole mortal sin of God thing, you know, doesn't really bother you. Now, Eugene, you got daughters. Are you the type of cat to let your daughter shack up in some Jack Tripper situation? Or are you the guy with the rifle trying to cajole, you know, your daughters gently toward the altar?
Well, that's funny because I'm about 10 years older than my sisters, right? And my mother called me and was upset. She said, you know, they're both choosing to live with their boyfriends and I'm not. And I, you know, I think that that was a successful save, you know, because I'm not so sure that the marriage should be the automatic and immediate default, unless of course you're gay, in which maybe case that should be your civil right, maybe. But I'm advocating that you live together as long as possible before you get the state involved in your relationship. You know, having relationships is tough enough without the state involved in it.
Ruben, what do you say? Keep the man out of it, or bring the man with you?
I think what we have here is this huge generational shift. You know, our generation really went through divorce in a big way.
Right.
The baby boomers and the generation right before the boomers, they did divorce upright, you know, many times, multiple times. And I think a lot of us, you know, grew up in those broken homes. Either we ourselves came from broken homes or we had families and friends who came from that sort of environment. And I think that we are sort of determined not to put our own kids through that. And so that's part of it. One of the things that's interesting about this study, though, too, is that there's, a sociological break, a socioeconomic break between the fact that sort of better, well-to-do, more educated couples are not getting divorced, but that isn't necessarily true for less affluent, less educated couples.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're fighting over money, man, you know, when you're fighting over money and you know, so-and-so doesn't have a job, you know, or he's working at rallies, well, yeah, that could tend to mess up your whole home life. You know, George, I know you're in the game. You know, how you feel about the shack up?
I met my wife in 97, and we got married in 99.
Cue violins here. Okay, go ahead.
No,
I'm sorry, it's
all good at this point.
Okay. And I think I mean, cue romantic violins. Go ahead.
I think it's just going to get better. I think a lot of people our ages are drawing on different traditions, and not simply marriage and divorce are just scripts. And I think people are rejecting them. They're rolling with their crew. They're, you know, thinking about wider alliances and allegiances. It's not simply, you know, binary as olden times.
I wonder about that.
Go ahead, Eugene.
I wonder how successful the average 29-year-old would be if he said that to his 30-year-old girlfriend. You know, hey, baby, we don't have to get stuck in that binary thing anymore, married or not married. We could just, I mean, my impression
She'd
is
be
that,
like, binary, okay, bye-bye.
I mean, I think at the age of 34, 35, people get, you know, the politics become less of an issue. It's like, you know, I got to get shacked up here.
Something's got to give.
So yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but you know, I think all that talking maybe is a luxury of the 20s. You got to be 24 before you can start doing that. But when you get up to 35, people are not messing around.
Okay, well, speaking of binary, it's time to say bye. Yo, Ruben, thanks so much for coming.
You bet.
George, my man on the left coast.
I dig you, man.
Thank you, Eugene.
My man.
Thank you.
Okay, Michelle, it's all you.
Thank you, Jimmy, and thank you, gentlemen. Very enlightening. As always, Jimmy Israel joined us from WUKY in Lexington, Kentucky. He writes for the opinion page of the Lexington Herald Leader. Ruben Navarrete joined us from KPBS in San Diego. He writes for the San Diego Union Tribune and CNN.com. Eugene Robinson joined us from Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco. He's a freelance writer, author, and a drum player. George Kelly is a blogger and online reporter with Contra Costa Times. He joined us from PacSat Studios in Sacramento. You can find links to all of our Barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore.